Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
No worries.
Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to talk to William Morgan of Buoyant.io. So, William, can you introduce yourself, talk about LinkerD, that is the main topic of discussion today, and then talk about your company. From there, we'll go to discuss Service Mesh, LinkerD, and the Istio, and everything else.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I'm William Morgan. I'm the CEO of a company called Buoyant. I'm also one of the creators of a project called Linkerd, which is an open source service mesh, which is widely deployed and used, and that Buoyant spends a lot of its time contributing to.
Awesome. So let's start from the basics. What is service mesh? Why do I need service mesh if I am embracing microservices? Why can't I just use something like Kubernetes and get going? Like, what is the need for a layer like service mesh in the microservices world?
Yes, why do I need another thing? I already have so many things. No, that was, that's a great question, and it's one that we have always had to answer, especially early on before service mesh became kind of a popular term. You know, no one wants to add another thing to their stack unless they really, really need to. But so what a service mesh does is it adds a layer of reliability and security and visibility to your microservices stack. And it does so in a way that does not involve any application changes, typically, and in a way that complements what something like Kubernetes or a container orchestrator gives you. So what Kubernetes gives you is the ability to say, hey, I want to abstract this my pool of hardware, right? Like, whether it's virtual or physical, I don't care. Just I want to run 3 of these and 5 of these and 7 of these and 100 of these, and Kubernetes, you just figure it out, right? And Kubernetes is very good at knowing when machines are down or when pods crash and restarting them or rescheduling them. What Kubernetes does not know anything about is, well, is this service returning 200s or is it returning 500s? Is the service fast or is it slow? Like, Kubernetes can't know anything about that. The application, now traditionally an application, has reported its metrics and you've kind of had application level monitoring and things like that. The service mesh sits somewhere in between, where it says, hey, a lot of that stuff doesn't actually have to be done at the application level. It can be done at the platform layer. And the advantage there is that then it's done uniformly across all my services. So I no longer have to, force everyone, every developer to get onto the same boat. We've got, we can do a bunch of the stuff at the platform layer.
Okay. So just to sort of put it in the perspective of the traditional way of doing things, instead of having a outside application monitoring service and then getting the developers to solve the problem, you are integrating directly with the platform and ensuring that if something is going wrong, like, it will communicate with the underlying platform and bring it up and ensure the reliability. That's what you mean by reliability, bringing in reliability to service mesh for microservices, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it doesn't remove 100% of the requirements from the application, right? But it can take over a significant portion of them, and they can do it again globally across all the services. And that becomes very important when you start having lots and lots of services.
So does this mean service mesh also integrates with the observability part of application, like application monitoring? Everything becomes becomes part of the platform rather than outside the unit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's a great example. So the service mesh, for example, can give you things like, what's the success rate of my services? And what's the request latency? What's that distribution? And what's the throughput of each of the services, right? Those are what we call the golden metrics, right? Those are the things where if success rate is down, you know, you want to wake up and deal with it, right? As opposed to something like CPU or memory, where those things are important to monitor, but if CPU rate goes up 10%, you don't necessarily have to wake up at 3 a.m. So if success rate drops, you do have to wake up. But, you know, so the service mesh can give you that without having to change application code. Of course, the applications, there's still a lot more that you want to know. So there's still a big APM, you know, kind of layer that the service mesh can't address. So it's really more complementary than anything else.
Okay. So Linkerd is one of the earliest service mesh that is available in the market. And now you are with version 2.0. Can you talk a little bit about why Linkerd came into existence, especially your past experience in Twitter and stuff like that, and how that drove Linkerd to existence? And also talk about what is different between Linkerd 1.x and Linkerd 2.x, and the evolution of Linkerd 2.x in the coming months to the next year.
Sure. We'll start with a little ancient history, which is way back in 2010, I joined a company called Twitter, and Twitter then spent the next, you know, 4 or 5 years going through this massive infrastructure migration from what was a monolithic Ruby on Rails application to, you know, fast forward 5 years, was a massively distributed microservices application. And Twitter was one of the earliest companies, not the earliest, but it was one of the earliest companies to go through that transformation. And as a result, it had to build out all sorts of infrastructure to make that happen. So for example, there weren't really container orchestrators out there. So Twitter had to take Mesos, which was a grad student project, and turn that into like a production ready system, right? And there were several other components. One of those components was a library called Finagle, which actually managed all of the service-to-service communication at Twitter. And so when my co-founder, Oliver Gould, and I left Twitter, we were both engineers there. When we left Twitter, we were thinking about that experience and the amount of effort, you know, that Twitter had to put in to making that, to going through that transformation was so crazy. We wanted to take that knowledge and take the open source and take those ideas and turn them into something that other people could use, because everyone else was starting to do the same thing, right? Now, Twitter didn't have containers. Twitter didn't have Kubernetes. Twitter didn't even really have the word microservices. That was still like a new word. And when we were looking around, we saw all these startups and other companies and even big enterprises adopting Kubernetes and containers. And so that was kind of the genesis of Linkerd. Was we knew what was going to happen. We knew once you run things with containers and Kubernetes, and you have 100 services, and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what's going on. One tiny problem in one service escalates to take down the entire site. So all of those things had been solved at Twitter, and so that was basically the genesis of Linkerd.
So let's talk about what is different between Linkerd 1.x and 2.x. And probably, like, if you can also lay out a little bit about the Linkerd architecture and talk about what are the protocols it supports, probably it'll help people, listeners, understand how it is fitting in.
Yeah, great. So Linkerd was the very first service mesh. It was the project that introduced that concept to the world. And Linkerd 1.x was actually built directly on the Twitter open source stack. So it was built on things like Finagle, which I mentioned, Netty, the JVM, Scala. And as a result, you know, it was extremely featureful, but it was also a JVM, you know, a JVM runtime, and the JVM is very, very good at scaling up. JVM is less good at scaling down, right? And part of what you want to do with the service mesh, the way this works, is you have these proxies that user space layer 7 proxies that are sitting next to application instances, and you have lots of those proxies. And so you want those proxies to be very, very small and very, very fast. And so, you know, Linkerd 1.x is extremely widely deployed, but there are a lot of use cases that it was difficult to make it work in because it was kind of a heavier weight project. So We introduced Linkerd 2.0, I think in September of last year, which was a rewrite of major portions off of the Twitter stack and onto Go and Rust and a bunch of other cool tools that are around there. And 2.x, so now we're on 2.1 and 2.2 will be coming out soon, is incredibly fast and it's incredibly lightweight. So now those proxies, rather than taking, you know, 200 megs of RSS, are taking like 10 megs, you know? And rather than having a 5 millisecond P99, it's like less than 1 millisecond. So we've been really focused on performance and on lightweight, the lightweight nature of 2.x. Yeah.
Got it. So I'm assuming, I suppose, all the protocols like HTTP, gRPC, and other things. So,
yeah, that's
and
right.
Also, Linkerd platform supported Mesosphere, ECS, and other things. Linkerd 2.0 right now supports Kubernetes, and you said that's going to support other platforms in the future. Can you talk a little bit about the roadmap?
Yeah, that's right. So 2.x right now is Kubernetes specific. We had to pick something to start with. As we expand, we really want to get to the point where we're not tied to Kubernetes, because we have many, many users who want to use it on ECS or on Mesos or on other systems. So that's all on the roadmap. A lot of the work that has gone into 2.x and that continues to go into 2.x is in taking some of the things that were actually quite complex in Linkerd 1.x and trying to make them a lot simpler. So, for example, 1.x required you to kind of do the wiring yourself. So you had to say, hey, application, I want you to send all calls through your local Linkerd instance. And you would do that through maybe setting an HTTP proxy environment variable, or maybe changing some config or something like that. With 2.x, we can actually do that completely for you. So in Kubernetes, we deploy something called an init container, which can do a little bit of IP tables magic to basically wire all those calls automatically. So we've made the install flow a lot simpler, whereas with 1.x, you know, you would have to spend like a week or two kind of wrapping your head around the configuration. With 2, you can actually just get it running in like 60 seconds, and then you can start learning around, learning how to use it. So that's been a lot of the focus.
Okay. So can you also tell us a little bit about the open source community that's powering Linkerd and how you are working with the CNCF community and all that?
Yeah, so Linkerd is a CNCF project, Cloud Native Computing Foundation. It's the same foundation that hosts Kubernetes and Prometheus and a bunch of other high profile projects. I think Linkerd was maybe the fourth or fifth project to get accepted to the CNCF. And that's been very helpful, because it's the right set of kind of sister projects that Linkerd interoperates with anyways, right? Linkerd supports gRPC and Prometheus and Kubernetes and like all the other projects that are in this ecosystem. Linkerd is fully open source under the Apache V2 license. Everything happens in GitHub. There is no enterprise only version or kind of feature gated, you know, expensive version. That's all open source, and that's important to us as Linkerd maintainers, that everything that you need in order to run Linkerd in production and add reliability, visibility, and security to your Kubernetes cluster has got to be fully open source. And then we have a contributor community, which is very healthy and active, and there's a ton of momentum, and it just makes me, I don't know, as an open source kind of maintainer, it makes me feel very happy that sometimes you have these very lonely experiences where it's like, okay, just me. Is anyone going to use this? We have kind of the opposite, where everyone's contributing stuff and everyone is asking questions and features, and we have a very friendly and engaged community, which, yeah, makes me feel very happy.
Yeah. Can you also talk a little bit about some of the users you see in the community as well as using your services?
Yeah, so it really spans kind of a very wide range, and it depends a lot on the nature of the company itself. So on the one hand, we have these, you know, new startups that are these greenfield environments, and they're just using Kubernetes, and they're often, you know, kind of very microservice heavy, right? Where they'll have 5 developers, but they'll have 50 microservices, you know? And then for them, you know, a lot of the value of Linkerd is kind of the visibility piece, where, gosh, we don't want to have to, you know, microservices are coming and going, and we just need to have this uniform layer of like what is going on at any point in time, right? And on the other extreme, we have, you know, some of our biggest users are very, very large enterprises, you know, who have this very rich kind of internal ecosystem of, well, maybe they have a small Kubernetes cluster, or maybe they have a large Kubernetes cluster, but they also have these 20 other things, you know, from various you know, points in time that all have to interoperate together. And there, a lot of the concerns that Linkerd addresses is really around kind of the decoupling of dependencies between teams. So Linkerd, you know, one of the things Linkerd can do is it can add TLS kind of transparently between services. So, you know, we'll initiate and terminate TLS. So anytime service A talks to service B, gets encrypted over the wire and validated and all this good stuff. That turns out to be a really useful feature for companies that are moving into the cloud for the first time, because now they're not running in their own firewalls, right? But getting your developers to do that, right? Well, we've got these 50 services and each is run by a different team, and the teams have their own, you know, product manager, and they have their own roadmaps, and getting them to all implement TLS the same way is like this insane nightmare. Or we can just wrap everything in Linkerd and have Linkerd deal with it. So those, it's a technology solution, but there's kind of this social dynamic that ends up really being valuable that Linkerd can help address.
All right. So one of the trends I am observing in the Kubernetes user community is they're bringing in legacy application onto Kubernetes, especially with the work going on in stateful sets and things like that. Like I'm seeing more stateful workloads, legacy monolithic workloads coming in. So will Service Mesh or Linkerd fit into that world? Does it add any value to those kind of workloads?
It doesn't really differentiate between stateful stuff and non-stateful stuff. The way that Linkerd operates is it sits at the communication layer, so or the boundaries between the services. So what actually happens in the services doesn't really matter so much as what's happening between the services.
Okay, so for Linkerd or any service mesh, it's just yet another service. It doesn't matter whether it's micro or a monolithic. Okay, got it. So let's sort of like shift gears a little bit and talk about the other service mesh projects that are out there in the community. I see Istio, I see HashiCorp Console, I see Envoy. I think even your company is involved in Conduit, right? Like, so how does these all fit into the, can you sort of lay out the landscape, talk about how different service mesh out there helps people? So if you can sort of like make it easy for people to understand and differentiate, that'll be good.
Yeah, so this is where I feel a little bad for the end users who are trying to make sense of like what's going on, because it is such a rapidly evolving landscape, you know, and things are changing from month to month that sometimes I even have trouble keeping track. But I think that's a good sign, right? It's a sign that everyone kind of recognizes that there's, you know, there's something really valuable here, but the actual shape of like, what's the best way to approach it? What's the best kind of, you know, angle? What's that's still kind of under development, right? And so, you know, I think you see that in things like kind of the design trade-offs that have been made between different projects. So for example, Istio is one that I'm semi-familiar with. And if you look at Istio, it's extremely complex, right? There's a lot of moving pieces. It has something like 51 CRDs. If you are a Kubernetes expert, that's like a crazy number. But it also has every possible feature you could ever want, right? And you can see that they made a trade-off, which is we're gonna have as many features as possible, kind of at the expense of complexity. Because the point of Istio is, well, we kind of want to get you on the GCP anyway, so we're gonna operate it for you. So kind of the operational cost doesn't matter, but having lots of features does matter, right? Whereas Linkerd took a very different approach, which is, well, we're not Google, we're not running anything for you, so the operational cost of Linkerd is very, very high. So, it's not high, it's very important to us. So we have to minimize it. So that means, okay, how do we design Linkerd and how do we build it and what are the features and how do we do this in such a way that not only do you have lots of good features, but running it in production is not this horrible experience, right? You can understand why things are there. Debuggability is a huge, huge, important kind of design goal for Linkerd, because we had, if nothing else, we had so many difficult experiences early on where people would introduce a service mesh and then things would go wrong. And of course, everyone blames the service mesh, but it turns out, oh, your layer three network had a firewall that was dropping packets, and like it becomes this nightmare to debug. So getting, making sure that the service mesh itself, that Linkerd is highly debuggable, is a critical aspect of how we're building Linkerd. So that's an example of some pretty concrete design trade-offs. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on kind of what is important to you in the service mesh and who is going to be operating it, right? Who's going to be on call for this thing?
Yeah. So like before the next topic I want to talk with you is about how enterprise users should look at the service mesh landscape as they go about planning their microservices transition and things like that. Before that, I want to ask one question related to community and service mesh. It could be a little controversial. Feel free to make it controversial or ignore it. But I just want to get your thoughts on it.
Okay.
On one hand, I see Linkerd in CNCF community. So Kubernetes is taking off. So Linkerd is part of CNCF. So if I want to go with all the open source Prometheus has taken off. So if I want to go with all the open CNCF projects, I'm going to sort of like take Linkerd and use it. On the other hand, Istio is seeing the backing of big companies like Google, Red Hat, and other large vendors. So like that could emerge as a standard for service mesh. So how do you think this dynamics is going to play out like in the community? Like there is always room for multiple offerings out there. But if Kubernetes is one, if we look at the trend around Kubernetes, it came in, there was Mesosphere supporting Mesos platform on one side, then we had Docker Swarm. Finally, Kubernetes has emerged as a standard because of the community support. Yep. How do you think this thing is going to shape up? What will be the standard for service mesh? Or do you expect any standardization to even happen at that layer?
Yeah, so I'll say something which is maybe going to get me a little bit of trouble, but I think Kubernetes is an amazing project, but I think that the magic behind Kubernetes was in that original set of developers who have, by and large, already left Google. So, and I think that since you brought Istio up in particular, I think it does not have that same magic. I think that it is so I guess I'll say it this way: what I hope happens is that the project that best meets the user's needs is the one that becomes the most popular, and that it's not about which company is the biggest and who's got the most marketing muscle to put behind their project. Because I think that can last for a while, but in the end run, you end up with things like, OpenStack? Where I think there was a lot of hopes and dreams pinned on that thing, but it didn't go the way that it was supposed to go, I think largely because of kind of over-vendorization. So that's probably a somewhat controversial opinion, but my focus for Linkerd is largely to kind of ignore all that stuff and instead focus on what are people doing with Linkerd, who are the users, what do they need, and how can we give it to them in a way that's as direct and as immediate as possible. And I guess maybe I'm an optimist and that I believe if we do that, then Linkerd will get to the point where it's making people happy. And that's kind of the best that's the most important thing.
I totally agree. Like I've been through one such thing. Like when I was part of OpenShift team, Cloud Foundry project was getting too many vendors backing it. And there was talk about Cloud Foundry becoming the standard. And now we know what is happening. So I totally see that. There were another aspect about Istio, which I am personally bothered about, is it's still not part of any open source foundation, or it's not an independent project right now. It's a Google-owned project, even though Red Hat and other vendors are supporting it. And that is something which I would love to see it outside of any specific vendor. So we'll see how things emerge. Yeah. Awesome. Let's now talk about the real thing that is going to help my listeners, which is like as an enterprise decision maker, we are planning to sort of move our entire architecture to microservices base, or start using a cloud native platform like Kubernetes, and we are looking at service mesh as the thing that's going to help us make this migration easier. So what are the things I should consider in thinking about microservices world as well as the about service mesh in particular. Like, if you have any wisdom to offer, that will help our listeners.
Yeah, so, you know, I think what is nice about this area is that everything is open source. And so you can, you know, you can do your due diligence and go build POCs and really get your hands dirty with things before you make commitments, right? And I think that's, you know, ultimately the right answer is probably going to be dependent on your organization. So I would get to the point where your engineers, maybe, you know, you're the decision maker, but the engineers who are actually operating this stuff have got to get their hands dirty and have got to give you an unbiased opinion about whether it's going to make their lives easier or more difficult. And I think one of the things that we've struggled with Linkerd, and that we've tried very hard to correct, because in 1.x, I don't think we did a very good job with this, is that the service mesh is positioned as this massive layer of infrastructure that you've just like bolted on Kubernetes, and now you're going to drop in this other big thing, and you're going to have to like learn all this stuff. Really trying with 2.x especially, we're trying to make the choice of a service mesh really shouldn't be this massive commitment of like, oh gosh, I'm going to go down this path and then I'm going to be stuck with it forever. It should be a tool like, you know, like any other tool where you can try it out. You can make it, you know, we make it very easy to try and very easy to throw away, right?
It should be like selecting a container format, like a image right. format. Yeah.
Right. That's right. And I believe if we can do that, then people will make better decisions in the long run. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Before we finish off, like one question I have is serverless is getting traction, and you have serverless functions as service like Lambda on one side, then Knative coming in and trying to sort of blur the sort of like making it a continuum of services from containers, container-based microservices to serverless functions. How do you think service mesh will fit into this world?
I almost think serverless fits right into service mesh in kind of a very natural way, where it doesn't really matter from the service mesh perspective. It doesn't matter whether this is like a long running service that's, you know, always there, or whether it's something that's just come on, you know, and it's going to vanish as soon as the function ends. In all cases, like, there has to be communication that happens. You want to monitor stuff. You want to secure stuff. They fit hand in hand. It's kind of like the stateful set question before, where from the service mesh perspective, what happens at deploy time and that kind of stuff doesn't really matter. As long as there's communication happening, then the service mesh can add value.
So if my understanding is right, service mesh doesn't care if the application is a disposable application that just pops up for a short period of time. It just cares once it is registered or once it is discovered. It just handles it based on, okay, I don't have to do any specific configuration changes or anything. It just works.
That's right.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
It should just work.
Okay, yeah, that makes complete sense. Thank you. It was a great conversation, and hopefully down the lane we can come back and see how service mesh has evolved in the next year or so. So thanks for your time. It was great chatting with you, and I'll look forward to having you back in the show.
Likewise, I'd love to do that. And if anyone wants to check out Linkerd, you can just go to linkerd.io, and it's very easy to get started.
Can you also tell us about your coordinates in the social network, like Twitter handle or some stuff like that?
Yes, you can follow at Linkerd. And we also have a very active Slack full of friendly people who want to help you if you get stuck. linkerd.slack.com.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for your time, William, and nice talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to other sponsors of StackSense.io for their continued support. Thanks to CloudFabrix and CoreStack for their support. You can learn more about CloudFabrix at www.cloudfabrix.com and CoreStack at www.corestack.io.